So hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Nostalgia Podcast. I'm here with Jared, a.k.a. Balzac.
Hey, everybody!
And special guest, Spiff, who is part of the Silk Games staff and does a lot of the coding for Nostalgia. So welcome, Spiff.
It's good to be here again.
Yeah, sad story to tell. We actually recorded this podcast last week, only we didn't record it because I was an idiot and did not hit the record button. What?
You're an idiot. Nobody likes you.
I know. I don't even like myself. So here we are. We're going to record it all over again and kind of talk with Spiff and just talk about the game. So first of all, I think we should probably describe Spiff and I the history of how we started working together on the project. Spiff and I worked on some previous Beyond games together, Corellium 1 and 2. And when I started Nostalgia, I started on my own, and one day I had posted some screenshots just for my own use, some, like mock-ups on an area, Silk Games file area, and Spiff discovered them and said, "Hey, this looks cool." I'm like, "Oh, cool, yeah, you weren't supposed to see that."
Well, or, how long were you working on that, you know, before I stumbled upon it? I mean, it had to be a kind of fair deal of work.
Yeah,
based on what we tested.
Right. I think I started the first mock-ups for Nostalgia in December of 08. And I think you discovered it the following spring. And that's also kind of close to when I announced the game. Mm. And Spiff didn't work on the game right away. What happened is one day, after we started like the first initial private testing, wasn't even public testing yet, he sent me like some code, and it was the naming system. He's like, "Hey, I made something for you," and he made the entire naming system, which was cool.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to actually work on the game at all.
I was
just going to sit back and. But
it just worked out. So
this kind of happened.
Exactly, it did kind of happen. And the thing we should explain is that Spiff has asked me not to like spoil the story for him, and you know, tell him what's going to happen. So the way we work is, you know, I'll make some mock-ups or have a system that I'm thinking, man, it'd be cool to add this to the game. Like, for example, like the marketplace or the PvP arena. And Spiff just takes it and runs with it. And
well, you know, you give good details, and that's, you know, easy to work on stuff.
When we talk about stuff during this podcast and Spiff asks questions, he doesn't know the answer because he's asked not to know the answers to stuff.
Yeah,
about spoilers.
Just like you normal people, normal players.
And Spiff also fixes a ton of bugs and picks up the slack when I'm busy and not working on the game. And
yeah, so stop reporting them.
So that's kind of been our deal. But something else about Spiff, and we talked about this before and we recorded this before, but we'll talk about it again, is that he actually did the fan translation of Dragon Quest V. So why don't you tell me the story about that?
I had worked on the 1 and 2 remix that was also on the Super Nintendo, and I did that one, and then somebody separate from the group I worked for that one asked me if I wanted to work on 5, and I said, okay, I'll do that. This was like my second year of college I was working on it, and busted out pretty quick, about 3 months or so, I think.
Wow. See, and that's amazing to me because I remember all in high school looking at this fan website for translations and the people working on the Dragon Quest V translation. I mean, it was like years they were working on it. And every now and then they released like a little patch that like translated the menus or something stupid like that. And it never got done. All of a sudden you bust it out in 3 months. It's incredible.
Yeah, I think it was just like kind of technical details and actually getting everything back into the... Because you couldn't just throw all the text. It had to be compressed and some other stuff. You know, they had to expand the menus and everything. It was kind of like technical details and why it wasn't done.
Right. And then you guys releasing your patch kind of lit a fire under their asses, and they actually put out their patch as well.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty cool. So basically, I mean, now we have access to, you know, the Nintendo DS, Dragon Quest V's and crap like that. But back
I prefer his version to the DS version.
I do too, actually.
You know, it uses the Dragon Warrior, you know.
Yeah, I never got the DS version of 5. I'm done with 5. That's it. I'm not playing it ever again.
I bet you are.
I can guarantee your version doesn't have crappy accents and
Oh yeah, that.
Bad
well, I can go
names.
Back and add them, right?
Yeah, don't
you
do
should
that.
Totally do
no,
that.
Wait, I'll add it in nostalgia. I'll make sure I have a whole area of bad accents just to piss
Oh
you
my
off.
gosh, yeah. I mean, I had to stop myself from throwing Dragon Quest IV for DS across the room because the translation was so bad. I just, just they ruined it. But it was a great game, but the translation was bad. So yeah, so Spiff has been a huge fan of RPGs for a long time. These types of RPGs, Dragon Quest style games, and what other kind of RPGs do you play or are you a big fan of?
You know, I haven't really been playing that much. I was playing Star Ocean.
Okay.
Just the first two. I haven't played any like the third or there's like a couple other ones. I haven't really played those, but the first one was originally on the Super Nintendo. But the second one's on the PlayStation. That one's a pretty nice one.
It's funny, for making a game like Nostalgia, my resume of older RPGs that I've played is somewhat slim. I mean, I have not played the Phantasy Star games. I played some of the Final Fantasies, not a whole lot of them. When I was a kid, my big favorites were Dragon Warrior. I loved Seventh Saga on Super Nintendo. Just like random RPGs, like the Shining Force games I've played, but I some of the classics. I never even played Lufia. So
the second one's the better of the games. The first one's, I mean, it's a kind of difficult. But the big thing that turns me off of the game is the foot speed of the characters is really slow.
Okay,
that's one of those things that turns me off in games when you can't really get around where you want to go quickly.
Right.
Right. But the second one's actually got a lot more puzzle elements. I know you're not a big fan of like doing it like too much. I mean,
right.
That you could argue that game does go a little bit overboard in the puzzles, but I mean, I know it's got a different thing. I mean, it has random encounters, but like you can actually see the enemies on the map, which, you know.
That's kind of, I enjoyed that in Chrono Trigger, that enemies on the map thing, and in Super Mario RPG, I enjoyed that.
I haven't played those in a while either.
Yeah, neither have I actually. No.
And I've got the original cards for both, but haven't cracked them out in a while.
Nice. So you last time we recorded this or didn't record it, you had some questions. Do you still have those or remember them?
I can remember them off my head. I can probably throw some new ones in here.
All right.
Well, I think the first thing I talked about was kind of like WoW style raids.
Right.
Where you could take like multiple parties for like a single boss who had like different components and each party would have to defeat their part for the whole boss to be defeated.
Yeah. No, and that's something that's totally doable in Nostalgia. I really enjoyed Naxxramas or whatever. There's a boss in WoW in that raid where you had to split up the party and you had to defeat them. The bosses kind of simultaneously, you had to make sure that one boss didn't die before the other one, and then you had to go fight a main boss after that. And so something like that in Nostalgia would be totally doable, I think, and really fun to put in. And at the very least, some sort of Dragon Quest IV style wagon system for larger bosses where you have three players in reserve and your wagon to fight a huge boss, which would be really cool, I think. So that's definitely doable for the future.
All right, well, we'll segue into boats because I brought up the wraparound overworld.
Oh, yes, right. The Mobius Strip overworld where...
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I have not decided yet whether we're going to go with... some classic RPGs had that wraparound overworld, some didn't. I haven't decided, and... It's going to be a matter of just kind of what fits the game.
And along with that, I think we were discussing like an underwater overworld too.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
We had talked about submarines. In addition to boats, there's going to be submarines in the game. And that's not so much of a spoiler because there's already NPCs in the world who kind of allude to it, that there's going to be a submarine. And those whirlpools you see around the world, the decision to be made is, are you just going to press a button and then, have the game just kind of move you automatically under the water to the connected whirlpool nearby? Or will we then transfer you to some sort of like underwater overworld, or something like that to have kind of a second overworld in the game? I haven't really decided on that.
Boat customization-wise, is that just kind of like a... different like color thing, different like with the gill capes, but like sail designs or something.
Yeah, I was thinking that we have different ways to go with that, with the boat customization. One is to obviously offer full customization of the color of the boat and primary, secondary color. The sail itself, I think it'd be kind of cool to have that remain white or whatever, unless you're in a guild, and then have the sail be your guild emblem.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
And also, we were talking about random encounters at sea and how we want, if we wanted to do that, or if we wanted to have a different system for handling boat travel.
Right, right, yeah.
Like, would people be able to just, like, run aground, like, anywhere, or would they have to go to specific port, designated port areas, like Final Fantasy One?
No, I think that we're going to have it where they can run aground anywhere, and I'm going to probably have to come up with some way to summon your boat, you know, be standing next to the water and summon your boat to appear, you know, right there, and do it in a way that it's not broken so you can't access, like, internal river systems that I don't want you to access yet, sort of thing. But, yeah, as far as random encounters go, what do you think, Jared? What do you think about random encounters in the ocean?
I say no.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards no too, just because it can get really obnoxious. And like, I remember Dragon Warrior 2 and even 3. You're sailing around the overworld, and the monsters were harder in certain areas of the ocean. And it wasn't really clear, you know, what those areas were, or you know, if you're sailing around exploring, you don't know if you're in an area where the monsters are friggin' 10 levels higher than you, you know, and you just die automatically in the first encounter.
So. Well, same thing happens in Enar though for players. So I mean.
Oh yeah.
You go left a little, like, two spaces too far and you automatically die. It's sort of the same principle, you know, it just sort of shows you where you're not supposed to go in the ocean.
Yeah, there was that one Let's Play guy who did, I don't know if you saw this, Spiff, but he was in the NR area and said, all right, they said to go east, so let's go east, and then he goes west instead. and he gets destroyed by the first group of monsters he encounters. I think that line of where the monsters start getting stronger in NR might need to be moved over a few spaces.
Those first testing versions, like, wizards couldn't beat slimes and, like, without dying, so.
That's true. That's very true. In the first testing versions, there were no separate groups for solo players either. Like, you were just screwed as a solo player. So, yeah, the game, and Spiff can attest to this, the game has become much, much, much easier even than it was this time 6 months ago, from the changes we've made. The monsters are not as strong, and monsters give way more experience and gold. Stuff in shops costs less, if you can picture that. Potions used to be more expensive. Inns used to be way more expensive. So we've kind of toned it down to appeal to more, I don't know, mainstream might not be the word, but more mainstream gamers who don't want to put up with, like, a super hard RPG. Although I still feel nostalgia is very hard. I think we've kind of hit a sweet spot in terms of challenge.
Yeah.
I have a serious question.
Okay.
I think you should put give people boat houses, like a subscriber feature.
Okay, now this is something that, another thing that I'm torn about, actually. And a long time ago, actually before even the public beta, Spiff coded in airships that were, like, acted like player houses. So, you know, it's a kind of like a Final Fantasy 3-4 type thing where you have an airship, you can fly it around, land it, get out of it, and the interior of the airship, you know, is like a little area that you walk around in and stuff like that. And being able to customize the inside, you know, buy different things to customize it, make it your own little house, stuff like that, is definitely on the agenda. The question is whether we bump up the time frame on that, and instead of waiting for airships to do that, to actually do that with boats in the overworld. So that's something I'm trying to decide right now. Spiff, you have any thoughts on that?
I can sort of see boats fitting boats a little bit better than airships,
mm-hmm.
unless we had, you know, airships play like a specific story and game role,
right?
From just being a novelty.
You see, that's the thing, is that I think airships are just going to be a novelty. I don't think they're going to play a story role. And so, you know, it's actually even feasible that in the next big content patch, we put in airships because the rest of the world's going to be open anyway. You know, maybe end game thing will be one of the things to accomplish will be to get an airship.
What kind of airships are we talking about here? Because, like, this isn't really a steampunk game. It'll have balloons or something.
Trust me when I say that it'll make sense when you see it. I know exactly how they're going to work in the story, and I think that it won't be a steampunk thing. We're going to save that for SNESTalgia.
Nice.
Thank you for joining us, Biff.
Anytime.
And we'll see you guys later. Thanks for listening.